Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast, Latin America. I am your host, Xavier Basáñez, Managing Director for Latin America in Alcott Global. Today is a pleasure for me to introduce you, Roy Calderón. Welcome, Roy.
Hello, Xavier. Thank you very much for having me in your podcast. I'm really glad to be here.
Great, Roy. For the people that don't know Roy is the general manager and site leader in Costa Rica for ATL Technologies. He has been leading this business for more than a year. Previously, he has been doing different roles, working with Philips as in the planning area, also working in market expansion for and solution development. For a while. Previous to that, he was performing as a supply chain director in establishing labs for over more than 2 years. Previous, he initiated his career also in the pharmacy industry. He has been working with Abbott and also Allergan in Costa Rica as a supply chain director in Costa Rica and material directors. Previously, he was working also in HB Fuller as a region sourcing manager and in Intel as a direct material manager. Something interesting that he initiated his career in a very good school that is Coca-Cola Manufacturing as a manufacturing manager for the Caribbean Refrescos. So welcome again, Roy, coming to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you again, Xavier.
Great to have you. So let us know how that career in supply chain started in Coca-Cola. How was that initial 8 years of your career?
Thank you. Well, it was very interesting. First of all, I began in Coca-Cola much earlier than the positions you mentioned. I joined Coca-Cola in Costa Rica as an environmental engineer. My original background is chemical engineering, and I joined Coca-Cola coming from another company as environmental engineer, and I perform as environmental engineer and doing some, you know, capital projects, some more engineering related work for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And then as I was in Costa Rica, the person doing the supply chain function had the opportunity to be on an expat assignment for a short term, for a few months outside of Costa Rica. And the plant manager at the time, he came to me and he offered me to step into that position. And I didn't know anything about supply chain at the time, but what my plant manager told me is that he had the confidence in me that I could perform the role. And I jumped in, you know, both feet into the water. And since I didn't have any prior experience or expertise, one of the things that I think that I have done well throughout my life is that I try to learn a lot all the time. I'm always looking for things to learn and to getting out of my comfort zone. And so I start studying and teaching myself and trying to learn myself how to become a good procurement and supply chain professional. I reach out to the experts within Coca-Cola company very openly, very transparently, saying I'm new into this role. It's a short-term assignment, but I want to do it well. I want to do more than just keeping the ship going. I want to be able to improve. And they were very generous with their experience and expertise and their knowledge with me. And I did a very good job at the time, and I fell in love with supply chain. So when the owner of the role came back to Costa Rica, instead of moving back to environmental engineering, I actually was tapped to keep going and pursuing a career in supply chain, doing a little bit more of system analysis and kind of a network analyst, trying to understand where the opportunities were, and also procurement analyst, doing a lot of data crunching and you know, heavy lifting carpentry work for the procurement professionals. And at the same time, I was learning a lot. And as part of that development process, I was tapped for an international assignment in Puerto Rico. Originally doing supply chain, I got certified as an MRP2 Class A auditor, which at the time was the most advanced supply chain model known that came all the way from the Oliver Wright times. And I started doing a lot of assessments to the Latin America Concentrate Manufacturing Network for supply chain performance and operation performance. a lot of internal consulting, if you may. And at the time I was learning a lot because I was really rubbing my elbows and shoulders mm-hmm. with most recognized professionals, both within the Coca-Cola company and consultants that the Coca-Cola company retained to improve our supply chain. And that's how I came to supply chain. It was a right-hand turn for me, but it turned out to be a commitment of a lifetime because I fell in love with supply chain and the dynamism and the opportunities and how much value you can really untap and create for the companies if you do a strong and good and robust supply chain management.
Yeah, great. I really love your expression. I fall in love with supply chain. And this is something that happened to all supply chainers over there. When they see the processes, they see how to lean the processes and know about the business and be able to contribute to the business. This is the way that the people fall in love in with supply chain, I guess, no?
Absolutely. And as I was doing a supply chain, again, one of my mentors told me, if I want to be a good supply chain professional, I had to be able to step into the shoes of my customer at some mm-hmm. point. I took a manufacturing manager position that you already mentioned in Caribbean Refrescos, that at the time was the largest concentrate manufacturing plant in the Coca-Cola system. And the idea was to be there for a few years and then came back to supply chain. But as I was getting ready to rotate back into supply chain, due to family situations, we had to come back to Costa Rica, and unfortunately, there wasn't a position for me in Coca-Cola. So I started knocking on doors, and Intel opened a door for me to come back to Costa Rica as direct materials manager.
Okay, very interesting. Well, that kind of things happen, but it's open other doors, that's right? So how was that Intel experience? How did you learn there?
Well, the first thing that is that I was obviously at the first a little bit concerned because I've been doing a career for 8 years in food and beverages. If you may, fast-moving mm-hmm. consumer goods, there's very few things that are more related with retail than Coca-Cola.
That's right.
And then I was moving into microprocessors manufacturing, which is a B2B business. Mm-hmm. And what I learned is that when you are a supply chain professional, your main product is information. The way we create value in supply chain is by gathering information about demand, gathering information about capacity, mm-hmm. both for our own manufacturing process and also our vendors and our suppliers, gather information about the logistics opportunities and the logistics performance, and then getting all that information to synchronize the different links of the supply chain and make sure that as you're doing that, you are optimizing your processes, you are taking advantage of the strength you and your partners across the supply network have, and you are at the same time managing proactively the risk that may arise on the horizon.
That's right.
And that's a very transparent and a very transferable knowledge and skill set industry to industry, regardless of the industry. So Intel was good for me. It showed me a very different industry, which I had to learn. I tried to learn a lot about the manufacturing process, both at Intel and also our suppliers, as much as I could. I guess that one of the advantages I have had throughout the years is that I can use my technical background as an engineer, as a chemical engineer, to understand the manufacturing processes.
That's right.
And by doing that, I had a very good grip of what are the constraints, what are the bottlenecks, what are the opportunities, and how we can protect us and mitigate those bottlenecks and take advantage of the opportunities and transfer that into the supply chain design.
Yeah, great. That is the key for learning in the supply chain areas. And what you have been saying about the information, capacity, manufacturing, logistics, this is something that is going in the DNA, that's right, when you're asking for that information in order to map what you have in front, in order to collaborate and do that kind of synchronization. And that is critical, as you said. Now, very interesting. And you stay there a short period and move it to HB Fueler Corporation and in sourcing manager, that's right?
Yeah, it is funny how life works.
Uh-huh.
When I was, when I was in still in Coca-Cola and putting my name out to recruiter firms, letting them know that I intended to come back to Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this Intel opportunity in front of me, and I was going through the process. Actually, I already had an offer letter from Intel, and then I received a phone call from a recruiter that told me, you know, there is a specialty chemicals company that is based in Costa Rica. They have 9 or 11 operations across Latin America, and they are looking for a regional procurement manager, a regional sourcing manager. Would you be interested in this position?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it sounded very, very good to me because it was a position very similar in scope and reach and complexity to what I had in Coca-Cola at the time. And I said, yes, of course. And then a couple of days later, he came back to me and he said, you know, unfortunately, we came in late. They already made an offer and the offer was accepted.
Oh, okay.
Fast forward, I don't know, 12, 15 months. And then I received a phone call from the same recruiter while I was on Intel and said, would you be still interested in that position we talked about a year ago? It is available again. So I said, yeah, of course. It sounds great because, you know, Intel is a great company. It is a terrific company. I learn a lot, and I truly admire Intel for all they can offer and all the impact they have had on the digital economy. But my position at the time was quite limited. Mm-hmm. Honestly, when I came to Intel, it was like taking a couple of steps backward in my professional development.
Yeah.
So when this opportunity came in that put me back again into the same level of reach and scope as I had mm-hmm. in Coca-Cola, I said, yes, I would be interested. And long story short, mm-hmm. After a very good, interesting selection process, they got me an offer and I accepted, and I started working with H.B. Fuller as their regional sourcing manager for Latin America.
Right.
And under my responsibility, I have to make sure that the supply line, especially the inbound supply line for all the manufacturing and commercial entities they had in Latin America, was smooth and optimized, obviously, from the point of view of cost. And again, a very different industry, from beverages to microprocessors to specialty chemicals.
Yeah, definitely. But it's very interesting that you have been working in all the initial part of the supply chain, no? Where you are, well, maybe the initial is the product development, but just the sourcing of product and just being in the right part, just to assure that all that 7 manufacturing facilities and all the commercial guys have the product on time with the right quantities. That's right.
That's how the work with H.B. Fuller began, but then it quickly evolved. Back at the time, and again, we are talking about early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, in early 2000s, if you were a supply chain professional, everything was around how can you drive waste out of the network and optimize the network to make it the lowest cost possible,
mm-hmm.
right? Especially when you have products that may be commoditized, like in the case of this specialty chemical company. So very quickly, my job morphed from just taking care of the inbound to doing supplier pathfinding. How can we identify, develop, and negotiate with suppliers that none of our competitors are using right now, by, as a company, taking a risk to go to places where none of our competitors were willing to go to source the molecules and the raw materials, the resins and natural products and stuff that we needed for our products.
Yeah.
So I found myself, on top of my role as the regional leader for sourcing, I found myself as part of a global sourcing council. And we spent about 70% of our time traveling to China, traveling to Southeast Asia, traveling to Eastern Europe, traveling throughout Latin America to find chemical companies that could have the capabilities to manufacture the molecules we needed mm-hmm. with the quality and quantities we needed that nobody else were using.
Wow.
And that they could be interested to come and play on the major leagues, if you may, and supply one of the major specialty chemicals on our business and our industry, and give the quantum leap they needed to be on the level we needed them to be a viable suppliers.
Wow.
So from the 5 years I spent with H.B. Fuller, I would say about 3.5 years, most of my focus was on that role. I had a very good, very strong team that could deal with the tactical activities. Most of my focus were the strategic alignment of the supply and the development, the identification and development of these suppliers. So yeah. a lot of what I did was going and finding these companies, you know, scouting for these companies, going to trade fairs across around the world in those areas and finding those companies that may have the technology, maybe building similar molecules or the same molecules for other uses, and that we could tap into those and then transfer the knowledge how to shape those molecules for the type of products we needed and start doing a sourcing and supplier development activity with them in terms of getting them to the right quality level, getting them to the operational controls level, and of course, understanding very well their own supply chain to mitigate any risks and to reach agreements in terms of how we were going to be mitigating risk across the whole supply chain, and taking that low-cost opportunity as an opportunity for this company, not just to supply the market in times of scarcity without any interruptions, but at the same time, to increase the profitability, because we were able to provide products where none of our competitors were able to increase because they were kind of in a quota system with the traditional suppliers.
Now, that's very, very interesting, because you pointed out a very interesting part of the entire supply chain that is the umbrella of that product development and working together with the procurement, doing the negotiation, find that unique features in terms of performance and in terms of cost that will be performing very well down the stream in your supply chain. So sometimes people don't see that in that function of the supply chain, but this is also a very strategic one, because you need to understand what is going on down the stream in order to be able to do the right design and do the right negotiation and purchasing for your internal chain. That's right?
Absolutely. And it goes beyond that, because it was for the first time in my career. And again, as I told you, I'm always looking for what can I learn new? What can I learn that I haven't done before? And for the first time in my career, I had the opportunity to have face-to-face time with the big decision makers in our customer end. I had the opportunity to join the sales team in designing the negotiation strategy with our own customers.
Yeah.
To convince them, to persuade them that allowing us to use these alternate suppliers was in their benefit. So I was able to go and join our sales managers and our, you know, strategic sales managers, strategic accounts managers, visiting the key suppliers, the most important suppliers, our top 15, top 20 suppliers, and then presenting to them the facts about if you want us to be limited to the traditional suppliers, that's fine. This is how much product we can give you, and this is the cost of that product. And then we can lay out what was the reality of the availability of those products.
Yeah, definitely.
But if you allow us formulate something for you based on these new suppliers, we can offer you this much more product that will allow you to grow in times of scarcity at this cost.
That's right.
And when we created that, what we were actually doing was expanding the size of the pie for us, for our customers, and for our suppliers. And we were untapping and uncovering opportunities that were created just because we were willing to take a risk and develop new suppliers and formulate new products tailor-made for our customers based on the new suppliers we have found. And it was a strong interaction with the commercial end, and it was a strong interaction with our research and development team, which was absolutely fantastic. I have to say you that, hands down, H.B. Fuller research and development team was at the time, and to the best of my knowledge, still is, among the best research and development team of any specialty companies in the world.
Wow.
They are absolutely terrific professionals.
Great.
And that strong interaction where we were working together as a team, the sales manager, the R&D professional, and myself as the sourcing professional, to have this conversation with our customers, with the key decision maker in our customers, to explain to them how being open to new opportunities that we were presenting in front of them could help them to increase their market share and their profitability was a great learning experience for me.
Oh, that's critical. And that's a very interesting experience that you got, because just being in the feet of your customer, you understanding clearly what they need and be able to provide then a better solution at a better cost. This is what is supply chain, no? Just you understanding all the functions where you serve to be able to give that added value that you said that at the beginning, no? I mean, just reducing the cost, increasing profitability. And this is the synchronization of the secret of the synchronization in the supply chain. Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And after that, you stayed there for 4 years. And I think that because the molecules attract to you too much, you move it to the pharma. So what happened in Allergia?
No, I stayed there for 5 years, very happy. But then, you know, sometimes life throws you a curveball.
Yeah.
At the time, my son was very young. He was 2 years old. I was recently divorced, and I was traveling 30-plus weeks a year. And I've been traveling. I had a stretch of 10, 11 years traveling 30-plus weeks a year. And, you know, being recently divorced with a 2-year-old son, I told to myself, if I want to be present in my son's life, I need a different professional opportunity.
Yeah, right.
So again, I tapped into some recruiters I knew, and I said, I'm very happy where I am. I'm very well paid where I am, but I would be willing to look for other opportunities that will allow me to spend more time in Costa Rica so I can be closer to my son. And that's how Allergan came to me. Again, another change of industry, but at the time, again, I was completely unafraid of that because I changed industries several times already. And as I told you, a good supply chain professional will thrive in whatever industry because what we are doing is very fundamental.
That's right.
So I joined Allergan as their material managers. Later on, the same position was renamed supply chain manager. It was supply chain since the very beginning. I had to go back to things I learned in Coke because if you may, my past by Intel and H.B. Fuller was very focused on the sourcing and procurement area. When I came back to Allergan, I came back to what I had in Coca-Cola, that on top of sourcing and procurement, I had production planning, customer service, warehouse management, transportation and logistics, the whole package.
So the whole package, that's right. Mm-hmm.
It was the whole package with uniqueness that the business I was, the division I was with Allergan was a class 3 implantable device that was manufactured in Costa Rica for the whole world. So in a sense, even though I was stationed in Costa Rica, my supply chain responsibilities extended worldwide because I was responsible to ensure we had sufficient raw materials to manufacture sufficient product to support the global demand. In essence, that was the nutshell of my scope and reach.
Very interesting. Very interesting. And there, you, just managing all that area, you were promoted as a supply chain director in your final year there, no?
Yeah, I mean, it was, as I told you, it was the same position since the very beginning. It just, the change of title or the change of name, it was just a reflection that
Allergan
was acquired by Actavis.
Yeah.
And Actavis, let's say, nomenclature was more around supply chain than materials. And then everything was renamed to be consistent with the rest of Actavis.
Yeah, got it.
But the position was more or less the same. So what was the interesting part in Allergan? The interesting part in Allergan is how we were able to optimize the way we operated by being more proactive on the demand management, on understanding the demand. We worked very hard in the first few years to improve our credibility and reliability as a manufacturing operation. When I joined Allergan for this particular division, our on-time and in-full performance was in the 60%.
Yeah.
I told my boss I was planning to reach 90% by the end of the year. This was in March. When I joined Allergan, it was in March. I told him by the end of the year, I plan to be on the 90s. And You know, he told me that if I could be on the 85, he was going to be very happy, but he doubted that we could manage. We closed the year a little bit over 90%, and the next year we continued with that. We raised to 98%. And as we were doing that, we gained credibility with the commercial organization.
Definitely.
So the first few years was about how we gained the credibility with the commercial organization. And once we had that credibility, then we could start probing and putting ideas up front on how we could work together, the commercial function and the manufacturing side, to optimize what we were doing, reduce inventory, improve costs by working together on demand management.
Yeah, that's it. That is clear. This is the key, I mean, because sometimes you said you need to try to synchronize the manufacturing guys with the commercial guys and convince each other that through the good forecast, that a good manage of the inventories, improving the processes, you will, both of them will be served internally and get a benefit for that final customer.
It is. It is very key. It is very key, very fundamental. And again, I was tapping back on some of the learnings I had in Coca-Cola. The first thing I needed to do was to understand much better our customer. Because being at the manufacturing side, sometimes you are very detached from the customer, especially on large corporations. So I asked for permission to join some of the sales calls, to walk with the sales reps to the doctor's offices and into the hospital and clinics, understand the concerns of the customers, the concerns of the commercial team, as a way to really have clarity on how we can create value for the commercial area and create value for the customers beyond just manufacturing product and getting an inventory number. The result of that is that over the years, we were able to build a model where we could, from the manufacturing side, we could influence significantly the inventory levels on the distribution centers and the regional distribution centers that belong to commercial. The old model was that commercial owned the inventory. They were, quote unquote, given permission to us as much inventory and to have as much inventory as they had, but that inventory was on their books, not on the manufacturing side books. We start working together and influencing how we could optimize that inventory. So I start having visibility over the global inventory and how we can optimize that. And by doing that, we were able to do some demand peak shaving and run smoother operation manufacturing and optimize inventory. We can even untap opportunities such as having lower inventory on some of the regional distribution centers and having a little bit higher inventory on some of the larger regional distribution centers. So US and Europe hold a little bit more inventory than what they naturally should have. But that inventory was used to support in unexpected peaks the distribution centers in Australia, Southeast Asia, some of the Latin American countries, so forth, so on. And it was a very careful job. We had to do it piece by piece. It was very gradual. We did not do any sudden adjustments or hard stops. It was a very, if you want, a very fine adjustment over the years to reach that level of optimization.
Yeah, definitely. And that's critical. And this is what we should be pointing out and asking to our customer, our consumer, internal, external, and be able to fit in their fix just to modify and get the benefit for the entire organization. And then, and after Allergan, you moved to Abbott. What's going on? You moved to Abbott and after also to Establishment Labs. Yeah. How was that two experience?
Well, it was good. I mean, I moved to Abbott because with the acquisition of Allergan and the way that Allergan was shaping, it became clear to me that the division where I was was not going to be a division where Allergan or the new Allergan was willing to invest significantly into growing it and research and development.
Yeah.
And therefore, it was not going to be a good opportunity to continue growing in my career. So Abbott came with a good offer. they had a high volume manufacturing site in Costa Rica for stent delivery system and expansion balloon expansion catheters. It was a different business to the one I've been within medical devices, but a different business. I came, the business I was with Allergan was a breast implant business. So it's a business that is very high mix, low volume. I mean, when I was in breast implants, I had over 6,000 SKUs of finished goods. And lot sizes could be from anything from 2 implants to 36 implants because of the high diversity. As you can imagine, you need to manufacture breast implants in any size, shapes, and textures you can imagine.
Yeah.
Going to Abbott was a very, very focused, high volume, low mix with very different challenges. One of the things that Abbott has is that they have very well oiled supply chain machine, very optimized, that it was built to minimize cost the most as possible. So again, going back, different strategy for supply chain was all about how we can drive inventory out of the system by having as close as just in time as possible every in the supply chain, raw materials, production planning, capacity management, transportation, so forth, so on. So it was a good opportunity for me, but I was barely a year into Abbott, and then Starshin Labs came to me with a good proposal to join them as global supply chain director with end-to-end responsibilities, everything from sourcing of any materials used, including marketing materials, all the way to last mile delivery in the markets we operated direct, delivering the goods to the surgeons and the doctors, and in some countries up to the patients. A very interesting, challenging. It was most of the idea of my work was how to optimize the front end of the supply chain, the inventory management and delivery portion to the doctors and the hospitals, developing the supply chain strategies for the markets where Establishing Labs operates direct. And it was a very good opportunity for me. Establishing Labs is a great company. Senior management of Establishing Labs and Establishing Labs CEO, Juan Jose Chacon, he is truly a visionary guy. And it was very interesting and a good lesson for me to watch him driving the business forward, to understand his vision and how passionate he is in how to drive Establishing Labs towards the purpose he has of improving women's health through femtech. And it was a very good experience for me. Right when I was joining Establishing Labs, pandemic hit.
And yeah, that's what I was talking just about to ask you, because in that time the pandemic hit, and for sure that was a moment of acceleration in the technology transformation, in the digitalization, and everybody was starting to have that, having Microsoft Teams or calls, but more than that, the digitalization come to us, no?
You know, it came from different areas. First of all, you know, I have to say, very few people probably had a global pandemic in their business continuity plans before 2020, and we were not the exception. We didn't have in our business continuity plan any provisions for the world will stand still overnight suddenly. So we have to face tough choices like most businesses, because almost overnight, elective procedures were canceled worldwide. Even if the patients were willing to go through the procedures, even if the surgeons were willing to execute the procedures, even if the hospital have the operating rooms available to perform the procedures, there was a mandatory moratorium on elective procedures in pretty much every country around the world, because all hands were on deck and all the focus was around
the pandemic. COVID-19
pandemic. And the difficult part for that is it was the uncertainty that we didn't know what we were facing.
Exactly.
We never knew. I mean, I don't think we were prepared for that. It was a learning, kind of a baptism by fire. Because at the very beginning, if you may remember, most countries said we're gonna quarantine everybody. Everything is gonna stop for a couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, 21 days, and we thought, okay, it's gonna be 3 weeks, and then we're going to be okay.
Exactly.
Because the original thinking process is if we wait for 3 weeks, everybody who is going to be sick is going to be sick, and everybody who is going to be healthy is going to be healthy, and that's it.
Exactly. But
that wasn't the way the pandemic worked, as we discovered. So suddenly everything has to restart opening little by little, very carefully. We had, at that point in time, if you remember, all the ports and airport were standing still. We had a huge imbalance on the container that lasted for over 2 years to get that balance back, because the pandemic hit in 2020 after most businesses have been for the past 20, 25 years in a continuous mode to drive redundancies out, to optimize by reduce and cutting everything you can to become the leanest possible way of your supply chain.
That's right.
So when the pandemic hit, most of the industry, in every company, had very little muscle to react to that.
That's right.
We were very lean to the point of becoming anorexic.
Exactly.
And we discovered that very painfully when the ocean carriers discovered that they didn't have enough boxes for everybody, and that the boxes they had were empty on a harbor where they cannot get the boxes because people was quarantined.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And when the airlines discovered that they didn't have sufficient lift capacity for all the sudden increases in personal protective equipment and other critically needed supplies for the hospitals.
Yeah.
When the companies discovered that they didn't have enough inventory to survive for 1 or 2 weeks without receiving any new goods. When I had colleagues in Europe that they had the raw materials, the components, the parts, everything they needed to manufacture critically need ventilators, but they couldn't do it because they didn't have the boxes, the cardboard boxes they needed to pack those, because those boxes were manufactured in China. And yeah, they didn't have those boxes from China to Europe. So we discovered that in very painful way, but we have to adapt.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's when courage and leadership was important, because in our world, Starling Labs, what we do was elective procedure. Everything was closed down. We couldn't perform a single procedure. We had our inventory not moving at all anywhere in the world, and we didn't know how long that was going to last. We didn't know if it was going to be a month or a quarter or a year. But we knew at the time that we need to make decisions. And it was when, as a company, we create scenarios, obviously. We cross the numbers. We work. We burn the midnight oil to cross all the numbers, to do these scenarios, to understand the financial implications, to try to imagine how the world was going to react, if it's going to be a month or a quarter or 6 months or a year. And after we put all that together, there was a courageous decision from our senior management team, led by Juan Jose, saying, we need to keep on manufacturing, even if we don't know how long we're going to stockpile inventory. We may need to rationalize the manufacturing, may not be 100% of capacity, may not be all the SKUs, but the direction for us manufacturing scientists was that let us know what are the critical SKUs, the ones that have the highest probability of moving once this will restart. And as you can imagine, for a global business, the most popular shape and size in Europe, it's very different to the most popular shape and size in Vietnam or Japan.
That's right.
Or Brazil or Colombia or Venezuela. So it turned out that, you know, we have so much variation that we have to go to our history and based on the actual demand data, understand how the markets will react when they reopen and make an educated guess. Wow. And we kept on manufacturing with the uncertainty that we didn't know how long are we going to be manufacturing without having any sales. And then how long would it take for that inventory to move once the world reopened?
Yeah, very
interesting. That's where I said that it was the courage and the vision of a leader what makes it different. And in this case, the courage and the vision of Juan Jose was fundamental to drive the business forward in times of uncertainty, making the tough decisions and saying, we will move forward because sooner or later, this will reopen and our patients will need us. It is what happened. I mean, when the world started reopening, which was different depending on the region and the countries, we saw a huge surge in our procedures, because all those patients that suddenly couldn't travel anymore because there was nowhere else to travel, all those patients that were anxiously waiting for their procedure, even those patients that were on the fence, that were just thinking about it, but they weren't sure, people suddenly realized that the most precious thing we have is our time and our own personal satisfaction.
That's right.
And if we would have stopped, like a lot of our competitors did, manufacturing, when the world opened again,
no, the business go down.
They didn't have the inventory. They didn't have the muscle to react to the surge in demand. And we did have the inventory and the muscle. And we were ready and we were prepared for that. We have made the deals with the logistics carriers. We have already scouted and made the deals with the last mile delivery in Spain and Germany and Italy and UK and Belgium and France and Brazil. And we were ready to support that.
Wow,
and
that's
when we opened, establishing labs was able to capture a significant portion of the market share because it was the company that has the supply chain ready
to supply
and available to take advantage of that opportunity, that unique opportunity.
Very interesting.
We were ready because we did our work, but we were ready most importantly because we had a courageous leader that was
definitely
And allow us to be ready for that opportunity.
I think that this is a very interesting topic also to write a book about that, for living the experience of COVID and how to be prepared with the supply chain. So maybe we can share the royalty for the book, just to give you the idea. But I think that will be great, I mean, to write about how establishment labs prepare his supply chain for reacting when COVID finished. Very interesting, very interesting. And after that, you move for another two roles before doing what you are doing now. So tell us about that movement, how it happened.
Well, you know, it is interesting because after, you know, 2-3 years, Starship Labs made the decision to reorganize in a different way, more regional mm-hmm. organizations. And under the regional organizations, the regional commercial manager was going to have control of pretty much all the aspects of the business. And then a position for a global supply chain was no longer needed. I mean, with the way Starship Labs grow and evolve, they need a different structure and a different organization. And my position was redundant. And honestly, I didn't want to go back to a regional position.
Yeah.
So I took the opportunity to do something different. I went back to reflect, what do I want to do in my life? And I remembered that mentor I had back in Coca-Cola that told me, to be a good professional, you have to be able to step into your customer's shoes. I've been manufacturing before and operations before, but I never been commercial.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with Enhanced Compliance, which is a specialty engineering consulting firm specialize in medical devices. And I took up a big stretch because I went to a company that was selling services, not goods,
mm-hmm.
and into a commercial role, not a supply chain role.
That's
so
right.
From manufacturing goods and doing supply chain management for goods, I went to a commercial role for services as a learning opportunity, reflecting on the fact that what we were selling, what Enhanced Compliance, the service Enhanced Compliance provides for their customers, is expert knowledge on how to optimize their business.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what I've been doing for the past 20 years, optimizing businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the knowledge I have acquired optimizing supply chain and operations, and I started knocking on doors and visiting clients and understanding what opportunities they may have to optimize their business and how Enhanced Compliance can help them to accelerate that process. And it was kind
of very interesting.
It was kind of a sabbatical year for me, and I will be forever grateful with Randy Smith, the CEO of Enhanced Compliance, because he trusted me that I was going to be able to do that job, that I was going to be able to stretch myself outside of my comfort zone into uncharted territory. And I consider that I was very successful into that role. I enjoyed it a lot. I learned a lot being the commercial person. I acquired new tools. I added additional tools to my toolbox.
No, definitely. This is very important because, I mean, you understanding and being in the foot of the commercial teams is give you a different perspective. And besides that, you apply your thinking is of supply chain and processes and how to solve, but also give you different point of view for completing your background in as an expert in supply chain and looking for help in the business. That's right.
Exactly.
Yes, definitely.
It was all how we can use the expert knowledge we have in enhanced compliance in many fields to help you optimize your business. So going there, having the conversation, understanding the challenges they had, and then coming back and reflect, okay, how can I use our brain power to help this company to optimize their business, to accelerate their development processes, to close the gaps they have in terms of compliance. And that was a very, very good, very enlightening opportunity for me as well on how to be part of that commercial
of
area.
Of that commercial area.
Oh, which great. Is just more than pushing things. It's about
and
creating value. At the end of the day, what I have learned is that it doesn't matter if you're on the supply end or if you're in the front end with your clients. It all revolves around how you create value.
Exactly. That's the critical point.
And, you know, it was a very interesting job, but I wanted to go back to supply chain. I received a phone call from a friend that told me, you know, Philips is looking for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And more or less at the same time, I had initial conversations with the COO of ATL.
Yeah.
They were going to start looking for a new general manager for Costa Rica. Philips came very quickly with an offer, and ATL has gone into an internal process that was delaying their decision whether or not to go out with this position. But I was just in 2 months with Philips. ATL came back and said, we are interested in offering you a position here. I talked to my boss in Philips and said, this is an opportunity I've been waiting for many years.
That's right.
Not just managing all the pieces of the operations and supply chain, by having the opportunity to integrate on that, being the site leader and being the P&L responsible. And they were very supportive with my decision. And mm-hmm. I joined ATL about 14 months ago. And it's been a tremendous ride. I'm enjoying myself. I'm learning a lot. 2023, we're going to be able to increase our revenue compared to 22 by 50%. And we are increasing our revenue, but we are also increasing our profitability, which is good. And, you know, it's giving me the opportunity to put all the pieces of the puzzle that I have mastered now and then and putting all together into the whole puzzle, which is
yes.
Good.
All the learnings that you have in the entire business of the supply chain, doing all the roles and also the commercial part, to show that, I mean, the supply chain leaders with also a background in the business have the right foot to be chief supply chain officers or to be CEO for any company. And this is key for the business. Because also you as a supply chainer, you all the time are thinking on that. So based on that, which is your personal things of future trends that will be changing the supply chain? If you have a crystal ball in front of you, what you can say?
Well, I think that at least for the next 5 to 10 years, we have learned the painful lessons of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
That we can optimize the supply chain up to a point. I think that the trend for clusterization and regionalization of supply chains will continue.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because we learned the hard way how fragile are the supply chains that are stretched around the globe,
mm-hmm.
but also because of geopolitical tensions that we cannot ignore.
Yeah, definitely.
That's key. That's key. That's going to be reshaping the supply chains. I think that one of the things that will keep happening is obviously the the digitalization of the businesses will continue at a tremendous speed. The use of the new generative AI generation of tools, the newer tools for artificial intelligence, and the integration of those in the day-to-day will continue and will accelerate the rate of change. And the ability to map and model and monitor multiple scenarios moving forward. One of the things I keep telling my people is that if, and I keep telling all the young engineers and professionals that work in our team at ATL, is that if you are not investing time right now learning about how to use the AI tools, how to integrate that into your day-to-day, how to program in Python, especially now that Python has been integrated into Excel in Office 365, you are missing a big opportunity.
That's right.
Because that's going to be a fundamental game changer. And I think that's going to accelerate a lot of the things we are seeing right now when it comes to business management and supply chain management.
No.
So I would envision to have more and more intelligent tools for decision making that will allow us to maybe not predict, but create possible scenarios for demand management, for supply management, for capacity management, for transportation management, that will help us to make better informed, more intelligent decisions into the future.
Definitely.
So that's going to be a trend. The other trend that I will see is for more and more novel material.
Mm-hmm.
That's already happening for consumer goods. And that's going to be moving gradually across the supply, across all the industries, from consumer goods to specialty goods. And eventually it will reach automotive, aerospace, and medical devices and pharmaceutical as well. Because now we can design, with the use of artificial intelligence, we can design better molecules, better substrates, better materials that will allow us and will allow the research and development functions to fine-tune the properties of the goods we provide to a level we haven't been able to see in the past.
Yeah.
So that's something that eventually will happen.
No, definitely. And aligned with this sustainability and responsibility that we have as a supply chain with the society.
Correct. And the other part that I think it's going to be continuing is the way we manage transportation globally, I think it's going to keep changing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we will see additional consolidation in the ocean carriers and the airlines. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because additional consolidation means that larger consortiums or larger interest groups will have the opportunity to use these tools to optimize the available capacity for ocean and land and airlift.
Yeah.
And I think that we will see eventually more and more models, kind of the Uber for cargo, if you may, mm-hmm. where we can be able to go and source and design routes and find routes that are going to be dynamically shaped based on real-time demand and real-time needs.
Definitely.
Well, having said that,
uh-huh.
that's going to be necessary, because I believe that more and more we will keep having transportation issues.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, there are no major plans to expand on the port infrastructure. And around the world, port infrastructure is already very thin, very, very collapsed in many countries. We will see congestion increasing in most of the ports. And the use of the artificial intelligence tools to better synchronize the arrival and management and departure of ships and vessels and containers in the ports is going to be critical to keep the supply chain well oiled,
yeah.
and to improve in terms of reliability and cost. So yeah. I hope that by having a bigger consolidation on the transportation industry, they will be pushing the local governments and port operators and
to take decision on that. Exactly.
To optimize and to work in a way that is more predictable and more proactive and less reactive.
Yeah, definitely.
The issues we're seeing right now in Manzanillo, what we're seeing right now in the Panama Canal, what we're seeing right now in Rotterdam, when we're seeing in Hong Kong, in Singapore, I mean, those issues about congestion in Long Beach and Miami and New York and the major ports, it's going to continue unless they decide to fundamentally shift the way they operate that infrastructure.
Definitely. Definitely.
And I don't think it's going to happen voluntarily. I think that's going to happen because a major transportation hubs, major transportation consortiums is going to push them to do it, or they will find alternate ports, an alternate way to make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And that is going to happen. So that will be very interesting, the future that is coming. Well, I mean, having a great, great conversation. I have been enjoying a lot in this conversation, Roy. So I have two last questions for you. My first one is, which recommendation and advice can you give for professionals that they want to develop their careers in supply chain and reach to C-level roles? Which kind of recommendation can you give?
Well, let me pass along some words I received from one of my great mentors, Jorge Chaveri, the general manager of the Costa Rica Coca-Cola concentrate plant at the time. He told me once, Roy, 50% of success is being ready when the opportunity comes.
Mm-hmm.
So my first advice is never stop learning. Always try to see what else is there that you can learn and that it can be useful for you to expand your toolbox. So that's number one. I mean, in my almost 30 years career, I think that I have had 4 or 5 years where I have not been pursuing any kind of formal education, to keep adding to my toolbox, it's a lot. I mean, I'm continually trying to understand what else is there. Last year, I took a specialization on big data and artificial intelligence. And mm-hmm. that was for ChatGPT. I had to go back and program and learn how to program in Python and R after 30 years not programming. It was fun.
Right. Before
I took coaching because I wanted to become more professional in the way I nurture and encourage and you know, help my team to grow. Never stop learning. So that's the first one, because again, 50% of success is to be ready when the opportunity comes.
That's right.
Now, the other 50% is to have the courage to move on that opportunity. Because more often than not, the big opportunities in your professional life will come as big challenges.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have the courage and believe in yourself that you can make it happen. And you need to have the courage to jump on those challenges. I think that early on in my career, I walked into my supervisors and I told them, what is your ugliest, biggest problem? Give that to me. I want to tame that lion. And I jump into the lion's cage, bare hands, just to tame the lion. As I evolve in my career, I have found that my motivation has shifted from taming the lion to helping other people to tame the lion, to jump into the mm-hmm. lion cage.
That
would be the second part of the words I want to pass on them is, if you have a big opportunity in front of you, go for it.
Go for it.
Have faith in yourself, go for it, because if you are able to solve the problem nobody else wants to solve, you're going to be given the opportunities for the roles they won't be offered to.
Yeah, that's right. Now, having a great, great conversation, great advices. I think that also I learned from you a lot today. And for sure, our people following the podcast will be learning. So before just saying bye-bye, I want you to give us your final message to the audience.
Again, thank you very much, Javier, for having me in this podcast. Thank you to Alcott Global for the opportunity. And for people in the supply chain area, you are in the right field, because we touch so many things and we have so many opportunities to create value, from procurement to negotiating with the customer to delivering value to the customer. That if you want to make a difference, supply chain is really the backbone, the nervous system, if you may, of any business.
Yeah.
We move everything that needs to be moved, and we have the information that is critical for decision making. So never stop learning, be passionate about supply chain, and enjoy the ride. It will have ups and downs, but that's what makes it so fun.
Perfect, perfect, Roy. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate that you accept the invitation to talk to our audience. And thank you guys, for listening to our podcast. If you like what you hear, you must go to www.alcottglobal.com and click on the button of the podcast to see all the programs and notes. Also, you can subscribe to mailing list to receive all the updates and news. You can share with your friends and also follow us on LinkedIn. And if you are looking to hire senior supply chain executives in your business in Latin, US, Spain, worldwide, just please let us know how we can help you from Alcott Global Executive Center. Thank you very much.